Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and another hopefully very memorable show dealing with the concepts of spirituality and metaphysics and science. Today, we might lean a little bit towards the science side some people would expect because we're going to talk about the truth. Now, I know that might be a little bit bold of me to talk about the truth, about climate and climatic changes. And so I think it's important to realize that at this stage, most people think they've heard one side or another of this particular issue, but are not necessarily convinced of any of anyone's side. I'm not trying to convince you. That's not my job, I don't think. I'm trying to explain what I consider to be whole concepts, which is what truth is made out of. A whole concept is a concept that all the examples that we can think of, that we experience, don't contradict the concept. That's called truth. You got it? Okay, and a concept is like a formula that you can plug into a situation, and any example that you use using that formula will give you hopefully similar results. And that means the formula is accurate. It's truthful. Okay, so now that you understand what the show's about, if you would like to, you can call in. The numbers are right on the website that you are tuned into. So you can use those numbers depending upon whether you're in the U.S. or if you're in Canada. And if you're someplace else, I guess you can still try and call in. You just have to pay for the phone call, which, depending upon where you are, if you're calling from Venus or Mars, it might be kind of expensive. But nonetheless, let's talk. No, I don't think anybody's really calling from Venus or Mars. That was just a joke. I know that some of you think seriously about that. But, okay, let me move on. What do I mean by a climatic change? That is a change that we notice in the overall weather patterns that are going on around us, and particularly in this day and age, we're very concerned about the temperature either going up or down. Okay. Now, many of you are probably familiar with our former Vice President Al Gore's explanation called An Inconvenient Truth in a movie in which he thought that the temperature of our planet was going up based upon the increasing levels of carbon dioxide and other gases like carbon dioxide, some of them even more potent, by the way, that are greenhouse gases. What is a greenhouse gas? A greenhouse gas is a gas that traps the heat. It allows the solar radiation to come in, but when it bounces off of the planet, you know, it instead of going out into space and just not heating things up, it produces more and more heat, just the way a greenhouse does. Greenhouses work exceptionally well because the plants in the greenhouse, they are many times building up some greenhouse gases. And it's very helpful for them because they like the greenhouse gases. They actually breathe them. When we breathe oxygen, they like those greenhouse gases. But you see, the problem is that in Earth, unlike in a greenhouse, where you might want plants to stay warm in the wintertime, the Earth is getting warm at all times. It's getting warmer when it shouldn't be so warm. Now, the question has to be asked, okay, if this is what's really going on, then how come in the last few years, particularly the last 3 or 4 years, things have been cooling down? I mean, they should be going up. They should be, because the amount of greenhouse gases is rising readily. So if you have a concept that's supposed to be truthful, it should apply to all the conditions, and that's what we're talking about, right? I have nothing against Al Gore. I think that he is a guy who's trying to make a point that we have an issue which emitting greenhouse gases, and over time, more than just the atmosphere heating up, there is a problem potentially in the long run with the oceans becoming acidified due to too much carbon dioxide and some other gases, mostly carbon dioxide in this case, mixing with seawater. And that produces kind of like a soda water effect, which is very acidic or relatively acidic, and it kills fish. They don't like it. So a lot of fish do not care to be swimming around in soda water. Now, I don't know if you would like to swim in soda water. You might. You know, like the feeling of the bubbles and all that stuff. But fish find it rather irritating, and it over time kills them. That's not a good thing. So there's another problem than just the question of global warming. There's the question of this acidification from the carbon dioxide getting actually trapped in the water. Also, an interesting thing that takes place is that as the water itself warms up, if there is global warming, then another gas called methane, which is at the more towards the bottom of the ocean, starts to suddenly go from a solid state to a gaseous state very quickly and is released from the ocean. And methane is like 23, 24 times more of a greenhouse gas than is carbon dioxide. So, and it also does other things. Methane is the stuff that we cook with. Some people do anyway. And it's a form of natural gas. And it is constructed from the breakdown of dead living tissue. So when animals die and they start to decompose, a lot of methane is produced. Now, at the bottom of the ocean, it's so cold that the methane kind of stays in a semi-solid state. That's fine. It doesn't hurt anything. But when the oceans get warm, the methane says, "Oop, I think I'm going to be a bubble." And it bubbles up and then rises to the ocean and gets into the atmosphere. It doesn't change into a liquid, which is kind of strange. We're used to things going from like a solid to a liquid to, you know, to eventually a gas. But methane's kind of strange. It goes almost completely from the semi-solid state to very quickly into a gaseous state. It's just the nature of it. It also has to do with the pressures that are underneath the ocean. The pressures change the chemistry of methane to a great extent. Because methane can be made into a liquid. It can. But you have to have different pressures. Okay, so I'm not going to get too technical on you tonight. Don't worry about it. All right. So but we have this conflict because there can't be truth. If Al Gore is telling us an inconvenient truth, it may not be a truth at all, at least not based upon the facts as they are represented at the present time. Because the present time, after 3.5 years, things should be getting warmer, and they've been getting cooler. What's going on? Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if it's inconvenient. I'll call it a convenient truth. How do you like that? Maybe I'll make a movie and make zillions of dollars like Al Gore. The convenient truth is the following. Now, I'm going to give you some spin on it, because this has to do with metaphysics and spirituality besides just science. And that is, the convenient truth is that the sun, our wonderful star, is kind of laying back, and it's not doing what it has been doing for 130, 40 years fairly consistently. There's a little hiccup here and there, but mostly consistently. And that is every 11 and a quarter years or so, something like that, it has been switching from what is called solar minimus to solar maximus and back and forth. Now, what is solar minimus and maximus? Well, that is not too hard to understand, really. When the sun is doing its solar minimus, it has very little, very few, and sometimes no, what we would consider to be magnetic storms going on inside of it. It's kind of in a passive state. And the magnetic storms can be seen on Earth as sunspots. So these sunspots virtually disappear. Another thing that happens is these magnetic storms can cause various solar flare kind of things, where very zillions of times of billions and trillions of zillions of particles, of charged particles, literally get thrown out of the sun because the storms get so violent and the crossing of these magnetic fields becomes so twisted that they eventually eject some of the sun's corona out into space, which can cause all kinds of not-so-pleasant effects. So these go quiescent. They may not stop completely, but for the most part, they're nice and quiet. Okay, that's during solar minimus. It's a normal thing. It's not like, oh, gee, the sun isn't doing its thing. No, it is doing its thing. But every so often, the last major time this took place, it was called 1859, the sun doesn't go out of a solar minimus into a solar maximus. It just says, I'm skipping this one. And it can skip several. It could just stay in solar minimus for 10, 20, 30 years at a time. Now, when it does this, the magnetic storms, the extra energy that is caused by these magnetic effects in the sun, which, by the way, is caused by one part of the sun spinning at a different rate than the other part of the sun. It's kind of like a twisted sun. When it's not going on, the sun is putting out less overall energy. Now, it isn't a lot. I mean, it isn't like, you know, you're turning the oven down from 500 degrees to 200 degrees or 250. Now, it's a few degrees at a time each year. It might account for 20, 30 degrees in an oven or a few percent. But interestingly, that's enough for us to notice the difference. It changes the amount of energy that strikes the Earth. And because it's averaged out over every day for years of time, it really has a profound effect on our weather. As a matter of fact, it can lower the temperature on Earth by as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a lot, let me tell you. That's a huge amount. And we shouldn't just dismiss this as being, like, irrelevant, because it's actually extremely relevant. Now, on the opposite side of the fence, if the sun were to go into a solar maximus for a prolonged period of time, we'll be all crispy fried. Yeah, it's going to get really hot because the Earth actually warms up a bit faster than it cools down. That has to do with the fact that we have a greenhouse effect. And so, interestingly, we could end up very quickly getting quite hot if this whole thing were to reverse on us. But I'm getting into the metaphysics and spirituality side of this now. I'm going to tell you that this is all by design, that a long time ago, it was pretty much planned out that we would be screwing things up by using a lot of fossil fuels and putting an inordinate amount of old carbon back into the atmosphere, old being that it is buried under the ground, and we're taking it out as coal or oil or natural gas, methane, and we're changing it into carbon dioxide, in part, and energy. Now, that carbon dioxide and the methane along with it, and some other gases that are even considerably worse, by the way, are being produced in increasing amounts. And so, some really exalted beings, exalted in the sense of their consciousness and their goodness, etc., connected to God, in effect. I mean, they're sort of like God's right hand, you know, doing its thing, are connected to and with the being that has some, is manifesting itself in some ways through our sun. Now, it's pretty hard to understand that because, you know, how is a being be a sun? Well, you know, how does your big toe become a part of your foot? I mean, it's just part of its body. And so what's going on is that to alleviate some of the increase in temperatures and to give us a bigger chance, a better chance at solving a relatively long-term problem to solve with as little negative consequences as possible, we are in a slowdown. We're in a slowdown of the sun's increasing its activity. And it is not, in my, this is again, this is my opinion, it is not the random act of chaos. It is rather a completely planned event to give us that time that we need so desperately. That, I believe, is the truth about what's going on right now. Unfortunately, it has a negative side, as they all do. And that is that many people who were buying into the carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases theories were predicting that by necessity, counting on the fact that the sun was going to continue to behave itself, of course, and act as it has for most of the time in the last whatever, that it would just be the solar minimus would have ended in 06, and by now we'd be in the solar maximus and things would be really cooking, and then they'd be vindicated and proven. But they weren't. They weren't vindicated, at least not in part. Now, I'm going to tell you some things that they are vindicated about, but they weren't vindicated about the whole Earth is going to suddenly turn into a crispy critter, and our overall average temperatures on Earth will be excessively high, higher than they have ever been, and that has not happened. As it should have, because the solar minimus has remained in effect for now 3+ years, 3.5, going on 3.5 years, and they're thinking, they being some scientists who are into astronomy and solar events, etc., are thinking that this could remain this way for at least another year, and they have no idea how long it's going to remain. I'm going to tell all of us, we should all be praying and hoping that it's going to remain for quite some time, because the CO2 levels and other kinds of greenhouse gases are still on the rise. I mean, China is building 1 to 2 coal-fired plants a week. You know, I mean, they're putting out so much carbon from their coal-fired plants, it's hard for us to even keep track of the thing. And that is going, regardless of what we do, it's not going to change virtually anything about this problem in the world, because China, India, some other countries are, you know, picking up the slack. Whatever we cut down, they're just going crazy. Now, I'll tell you something else that's happening. As you all are aware, we are in an economic nightmare for the world. Not just in the United States, but the United States is doing worse, not better, because we're not doing the right things, in my opinion. Well, I know you believe in Obama, et cetera. You know, I don't believe in anybody. I'm just telling you that we're not doing things right. And consequently, things are getting worse here, as well as in other places. Here are the problems that we face. Those kinds of economic issues means that we are not going to likely, voluntarily, say, change our lifestyle to a more expensive one and cut down some of our greenhouse emissions. And we're not going to make things more efficient, which is even more important in anything, such as conservation and making everything use less energy to carry out the same level of activity. That's what we're aiming for. That's called intelligence. And it's one of the things we're here to learn about the universe, especially when we're physically alive. So we're supposed to be doing that, but it's harder and harder to do that when we're in, like, an economic, I call it a depression now, you might call it a recession, whatever you want to call it. Things are not good. This is certainly a problem, but there's kind of a goofy, upside-down nature to this thing. This economic problem is the result of our own greed, and many of you know all of the, you know, the banking things and the unsecured this and that, and then these kind of crazy securities that they're selling that insures things that it can't be insured and nobody could afford it, and crazy stuff. Okay, all that was going on, yeah. But now what's happening is the amount of economic activity is slowing down, even in China and India, but not as much as here. And so the slowdown is reducing the percentage of increase that was taking place in terms of putting greenhouse gases in. I mean, things get real bad. Nobody will be doing anything. And I guess then our greenhouse emissions will really start to drop, which is a great thing. The only problem is that so will the population. People will starve to death. We'll have terrible consequences, maybe plagues and other things, because we won't be able to economically support the systems that we have created. that's a bad thing, but it has a, I guess you could call it the silver lining is, you know, if we're not putting more CO2 in the atmosphere, then maybe things will get better in that respect. Also, the solar minimus can't be forestalled indefinitely because it has a negative effect. When the sun isn't pushing out a lot of energy through the solar system, more and more of some substances called like gamma rays, which are really dangerous to us, can get into the solar system and affect the Earth. So that's, you know, it's sort of like washing these things out with the pressure it creates in its solar wind, etc. But when you slow it down, because it's in the minimus position for too long, you have other problems. Everything has to balance itself out. So that's what we can look forward to. And solar radiation, I mean, not solar, gamma radiation coming from distant stars can be extremely dangerous. It will produce horrible changes in the genetic structure of all living things, and the stuff we call cancer could go way up. So we're looking at a lot of problems here because everything is so balanced. You see? You see? It's not just wind. It's balanced, and it's balanced from one thing to the other. Now, another thing that's going is that the Earth is not heating up evenly. I bet you didn't notice that although the average temperature on Earth has dropped, because as long as the solar minimus is in effect, even though we're putting a little more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, although in the last 6 months it's been going down because of economic slowdown, but regardless, we're still putting a lot in, there is an offsetting factor that most people don't know about. And it has to do with the way the oceans work. It's pretty complicated, and some people are saying that they're still not positive how it works. But I'll try to tell you what I think is going on, and as best as I can explain just the effect. So let's start with the effect. The effect is that more and more of what is the residual heat that's in our atmosphere due to quote-unquote greenhouse gases is moving mostly towards the North Pole. Some of it's also moving towards the South Pole, but the majority is going towards the North Pole. So here is a weird thing. The tropics, like if you're down, you know, in Ecuador and you're having a great time, it's actually cooling off. Ecuador is getting cooler because the solar minimus is producing that effect. Even though there's more greenhouse gases, it's not getting that hot. It's getting actually cooler because of the sun. But because the Earth spins at a certain rate, the oceans and air don't spin at the same rate and speed at the equator as they do at the poles. And this is the very effect that actually creates these magnetic storms on the sun. Well, the same thing is kind of going on in the Earth and the oceans and in the air. And because of this, we have an imbalance when you start cooling things off. And so, weird as it seems, it's still getting warmer and warmer, particularly at the North Pole, while the rest of the Earth is getting cooler. And that has to do with the fact that the energy tends to move in a certain direction and in a certain twisting motion that is counter to the center of the Earth. So the midpoint of the Earth, the equator of the Earth. The equator of the Earth is getting cooler while it's pushing most of the added heat the heat that was on the Earth, it's moving towards the North Pole. This just happens to be the way, and it's called the Cornelius effect, for those of you who want to know that. I know a fancy word. But so we're getting this strange effect, which is counterintuitive. Like, why would it be getting warmer at the poles when the rest of the Earth is cooling down? Well, it's because of this effect that the way the energy moves, because the Earth is not producing an even effect as it spins every day. And as it cools down, most of the warmer energy moves towards the poles in some of the water and certainly even more of the clouds in the air. Okay, that's what's going on there. And so at the present time, the North Pole particularly, is melting, even though we don't have a full greenhouse effect because it's being countered by the solar minimus. Now, I got to tell you, if we suddenly jump into high gear and we go to solar maximus, we could be in big trouble because this effect, although it will still slow down, actually, the Cornelius effect will slow down. Everything else, everything is balanced. I wonder who created that idea. Maybe it was God. But the point is that, so you lose some of the Cornelius effect, which is a good thing, by the way. So it balances it out, and it'll push a bit more of the heat into the tropics, but then suddenly the tropics and any part of the warmer temperate ranges up to the equator are going to get much hotter very fast. We could have a shift literally almost overnight, and that would be scary. So if we were to go into a solar maximus, we could have some very, very serious problems. Now, you might say, well, but wouldn't it slow down the heat at the North Pole? Well, yeah, a bit. Sure, that will happen, but it's not going to do it enough because at the same time, we're heating up the whole planet. So the overall effect over a longer period of time, years, will be that the poles could melt completely. Now, there is another thing, and I'm going to have to go into this when we're probably when we come back from break. But there's another thing that's happening. Again, it's another safeguard. It's wonderful, but it's also scary, because we have something called the conveyor system. It sounds like some kind of factory, of hot and cold water exchanges, and also how we are salt water meets fresh water, and it, because of its difference in weight, it creates this movement, especially when one side is hot and the other side is cold. It's a great system. Now, the thing that screws it up is if we suddenly have too much melting of the poles, especially the North Pole, but any of the poles, or any of the frozen areas of the Earth, too much melting causes too much fresh water to go in the system, cuts down the desalination, and this conveyor system of movement of energy from one part of the planet to another can completely stop. And when that happens, guess what? You go into an ice age. After all that business about the Earth heating up and we may cook ourselves to death, we could go into an ice age, and it only takes somewhere between 1 and 2 years, about 18 months on an average, for it to take place. Yeah, it's like, it's not like that movie, the 7 day thing, whatever, but because it doesn't happen that fast, but it's fast. I mean, a year and a half to be, you know, everybody's got all their air conditioners turned up to the max and doing all this other stuff, cool off. A year and a half later, we're all living with Eskimos, and it's like 20, 30 degrees colder outside. That's what can happen. And we may actually be facing that as a dilemma. But, again, I want to remind you that we don't live in a random universe, in a random situation. There's a spiritual side to existence. And that spiritual side has rational, reasonable reasons for everything that's going on. So we're going to talk more about that when we come back from break. And that will be in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today, we're talking about a convenient truth, the truth about climatic change. Now, I know that's a play on words, of course. All right. So, what's the convenient truth? The convenient truth appears, based upon what I covered in the first half of the show, that not because of random events, but because of guided spiritual events, we'll be given a greater chance to correct the problems we have in greed, ignorance, self-delusion, and destructiveness to our world and life in it by expanding out, one, the time factor, by giving us more time with the solar minimus. Now, remember, that can't go on too long before we start having, you know, people developing third arms or whatever. That's not going to be good. But because of genetic changes. But it can maintain itself for probably a good amount of time, maybe another decade even, if necessary. But there's a counter factor here, and this is what I hope you're realizing. We're not just getting saved because we're such goody people and all that. We're getting saved because the world's getting saved. But what's happening is it's being done at the cost of our own suffering. We are suffering because we've lost a lot of economic issues, because we're not responding properly to each other. And for years, for centuries, we've been very greedy. And so, consequently, there's a price to be paid in a spiritual sense. And you can call it karma, or you can call it whatever you want, but what we're paying is that our economy is slowing down. And it's slowing down because our own greed has produced that, which is, in a weird way, a good thing, because while it may cost the lives of some human beings, which is not good, I'm not saying that's great, but, and it may harm some people and cause a lot of suffering for people. The good part about it is that we will overall save the planet, but at the cost of some of our own human life, while lower life forms will be saved. Because otherwise, if you look at it from the standpoint, okay, let's say we didn't have this recession, depression going on, and we were continuing to pump out more and more CO2 at the levels we were at, even the solar minimus wasn't going to probably save our butts, and the result was going to be some really terrible consequences. So you see, this is a better alternative, although one much more painful. And that's the interesting part about it. I find it amazing. So there are checks and balances, not only in the physical geometries and physical geographies and climate changes on Earth, but there's also a spiritual principle or principles behind what's going on in humanity. And we are trying to solve some of these problems. Now, right now in the United States, we're coming up with cap and trade. Is this a good thing? Well, it all depends on who you are, I guess. If you're President Obama, you think it is a good thing because he thinks that it will force people to pay more attention to the amount of greenhouse gas emissions they are producing and how much they are using of energy in general, and to move away from greenhouse emissions of energy that are very inefficient and bad for the planet. That's one way to look at it. The way I look at it is the following, that it reduces our capability in choice to find more innovative methods of creating, we'll say, various solutions. And it does so by reducing the amount of wealth that people have. Because if people don't have any wealth, and if everybody's running around and waiting for their next meal in a food line, in a soup line, it's going to be pretty hard to invent the next best great system of producing energy efficiently without greenhouse emissions, or changing our present methods to become more efficient. And that's our problem. The problem is that government is best when it is increasing freedom and helping others to become creative. And at the same time, it's at its worst when it's decreasing freedom and reducing others' ability to do so by usually overtaxing and by restricting through governmental rules the ability for a person to be creative. And so consequently, that's not the best way to proceed. So I'm not in favor of the present concepts of cap and trade for that reason. There are better answers. You might say, well, what are those answers? If you don't force people, they're not going to change. You know? Nah, that's not true. There's not true. Yeah, people will change when you give them rewards for their changes. So why don't you just make it that everybody's okay where they are. But the people who are most creative, the people who are going to do the most to save the planet and save the other people who aren't going to do anything no matter what you do with them because they don't care, those people make much higher amounts of money, get greater recognition, and are free to do their creation without rules and regulations that virtually torture them to death and make it so that it's virtually impossible for them to proceed. Then, if you do the positive side of what I said, you end up with the people who are the real engines of job creation, the real engines of invention, and the solution, the solvers, the problem solvers of the really serious problems we've got. You get them going. The rest of the people you're not hurting because you can say, well, they're not participating at the same level in the wealth and the freedom and all this. They're choosing not to. And or they already chose not to because karmically they were maybe born with not as great of the most intelligent genes or whatever, so they're not maybe as capable. But that's because of other lives that they lived before. So it's still part of who they are and what they do. And it's not a punishment. It's a choice. The choices they made before, the choices they're making today, and more than the second than the first, and the results are that they're getting what they choose to live as. It's not like, gee, those poor folks, they're just getting trampled on by the people who are the creators, etc. That's just not true. That isn't what's going on. I mean, not at all. It's like, and if you're promoting and helping people to become creative, if you're poor and you're down and out, because of the promotions the government does, that you can still do something. You can still get in on the movement, provided you're willing to put in the tough hours and time and effort to be able to achieve this. So I'm not in favor of cap and trade. I'm in favor of, we'll call it, carrot and no stick. lots of carrots, get rid of the stick, and for the people who don't choose to take the carrots, let them live their lives just the way they're living. The rest of the people who are the creative ones, who are going to find the solutions, who maybe become zillionaires in the process, that's cool. Let's let them do it. And they'll solve our problems. But if you punish those people, if you remove their ability to function, then we will collapse. Our economy will collapse. Our country will collapse. I know you think that's ridiculous. Oh, it's the United States. The United States can't collapse. We're the greatest of all the genocides. Yeah, okay, we're the greatest. Our economy declined 6.5% while the crazy, dictatorial, red Chinese economy expanded 7.5%. How did they do that? Because believe it or not, they are following some of the suggestions that I'm stating. They're still ridiculously autocratic. There's a lack of political freedom, but they're expanding the economic freedom. And you could say, well, so you give up a little political freedom and human rights, and maybe if they don't like you, they'll send you to the gulag, you'll make Nike shoes or whatever. But the point is that, yo, that's a terrible thing. I want you to know that. Those are terrible things. But at the same time, they are encouraging entrepreneurship. They are encouraging that people be creative. Yeah, and in some of that encouragement, they also encourage people to rip us off because they don't care about that. So they have a mixed bag. But even so, even with their terrible, immoral, amoral, dictatorial, terrible, oppressive, lack of human rights approach to existence, the very fact that they are pro, we'll say, development of creative businesses, makes their economy work better than ours right now. That's scary. We better take a lesson from that. Now, does that mean we should become autocratic and everything that China is, while we're, going to try to solve our economic problems? No, of course not. As a matter of fact, that won't work, particularly in the United States. The Chinese people have not fully sensed their capacity of God, which the first part of God is to be free. They haven't fully found that. But we in the United States, and those other countries that follow the United States, in similar fashion, have. As a country becomes more dictatorial, as a government becomes bigger and more bullying of others, it is counterproductive both to the economy and in the long run to the people. And in this country, the end result could be insurrection or even revolution. Don't think it's not possible because, right now we're headed down a path that is not great. Will we change it? I think so. Within a year or two, I think people are going to wake up and think, you know what? I want to be free. And I want there to be more creativity. And we need to have a tremendous amount of loosening up of the ability to do those things, which means that the government, instead of creating stupid jobs that you can't even fulfill or make any money in anyway, should be helping small businesses, or any businesses, to develop themselves and develop some of the people that are part of those businesses into becoming more creative and more free by improving loans, increasing the amount of capital, and reducing the amount of regulations, and yes, even taxes. And it doesn't make any sense to create a healthcare plan that tells people what and how they're going to take care of their health, because that's a reform. That's not a reform. That's called dictatorial response. The government is dictating. And they could have rationing. They will have worse than rationing. And rationing scares me much less than having a government that is ultimately going to force its will on who and how people can choose to have health care of any sort. That's a very, very negative thing. It could lead to some serious changes. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is that how in the heck are we going to improve our climate and prepare for a solar maximus if everybody is being coddled and controlled and put into free fall financially, and most of us are experiencing some of that now, by a self-created depression. I mean, it's just not going to happen. You see, if you don't have enough money to buy food, nobody's going to be worrying much about any of these other issues. And it's going to become a really serious problem. So we need to be cautious more than virtually any place. Because oddly, China can probably go on for decades, maybe centuries, with their present system, as autocratic and non-democratic as it is. And they can actually make considerable improvement. We can't. We can't because we've been there. We've seen the promised land. It's called the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. We live it, and we will not go out with a whimper. So it's a very important point to be considering these notions I'm mentioning. And everybody needs to be concerned, because how in the heck are we going to change the really big problems when we can't, at this point, even run our own government or choose to control the manipulation and, we'll say, political corruption that is so commonplace? We've got to do something about this, folks. And we don't have a lot of time. I think that we will find ourselves in a position where we, having been the leading country, will be the trailing country, and there will be no country that leads that isn't autocratic and horrible, so we could see a terrible dark age upon us, the planet. Now, I'm hoping that's not the direction we're going to end up. I'm hoping that people will wake up and change what is, at the present time, things getting out of control, and there not being really enough awareness, which is why I'm talking about this. There isn't enough understanding of the interconnectivity of spiritual realities with physical events. Most people don't really get why the Earth is cooling off. Of course, some people do, and they say, well, it's because we're in solar minimus, but the real truth, remember it's about truth, is because we'll be given a shot, a chance, to make the change before we finalize the deal. Before we really go overboard. And to make that change, we've got to be more, we'll call it, wise in the way that we live. We've got to have a government that's also much more responsive to what the group of people that exist want. I made some suggestions about that, such as even us becoming more of a pure democracy instead of a republic, because the republic is being twisted around and it's being manipulated to become a totally, we'll call it, non-democratic system. And that's not good. That's really not a good thing at all. We want it to be as democratic as it possibly can, and with the new technologies we have, we could go a lot further than we've ever done before. So you can listen to some of those earlier shows and get an idea. Okay, so how are we going to solve our climate problem? I'm hoping that this is the solution. You ready? Number one, we have to develop enough wealth so that we will decide to do it in a positive way than be forced to do it by putting us all into poverty through draconian cap and trades and other terrible things that will suck the life out of our economic selves. Once we don't have any economic future, all other futures become much dimmer. So the first thing we need to do is to get our house in order about that. No more spending on ridiculous things that are completely useless, even counterproductive, such as a nationalized health situation. I mean, that's ridiculous. let's give catastrophic health to everybody. I'll go over there. Everybody gets a catastrophic health policy, right, if you want it. And you're going to pay for it. You got to pay for it yourself. It's not a policy that's just given to you like, okay. But if you don't have any money or if you can't really afford it, then it's proportionate to whatever money you have. And a few people, not very many, maybe a few million, may have to be given it for free for a while. But it doesn't remain that way. And so it depends on if they start making better income, then they got to pay more. That seems like a reasonable alternative for the people who think they need it, but no control by the government. The government's not going to be, they're making a board right now as we speak. That board is going to determine all health care. By a few bureaucrats, you're going to determine what kind of health care you're going to get. Have we ever heard of such a thing in the United States? I mean, if we were in the old Soviet Union, where am I, China? Maybe it makes some sense. Except China doesn't have universal health care. Everybody thinks they do, but they don't. At any rate, okay, so that's got to change. We got to change cap and trade because it's crazy. It's a negative system rather than a positive. A positive system is where people are encouraged to become wealthy, to become creative, to get recognition for their efforts, etc., but not that they're tortured to death. If they just wanted to go on the way they've been because they can't afford anything else at the present time. So just, you know, instead of putting every coal plant out of business, over 50% of our energy in the United States is made from coal. Well, do we what we can to encourage people to clean it up. And at the same time, we'll leave it so that we will reduce it through not just what we do, but by getting everybody else on board. Instead of spending every dime we have to try to reduce our pollution of greenhouse gases by 5%, why don't we reduce the entire world by 0.5% and it will do a lot more? And we can do that by becoming a higher economic power than we presently are, considerably better, more like we were 10 or 15 years ago. And then we can put others' feet to the fire because if we choose not to trade with them, or whatever we choose to do, we have more financial clout, and that's what people understand in other countries. You see what I'm saying? Otherwise, they're just going to laugh at us and say, well, who cares about the United States? Or they has been. They blew all their money on crazy stuff, and now it doesn't matter. Okay, I hope that makes some sense. We are out of time for right now, and I would love to talk much more about this subject. I want you to see that there's a whole connectivity. And it's all happening because of spiritual factors behind the scenes. We're in a change of the rage, if you understand what that means. And this is part of the drama and part of the suffering. So we can make a change. On Monday, July 20th, if you're in the Phoenix area, go hear Mimi talk about reincarnation. Of course, there's no charge. It's open to the public. 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. over Borders, Books, and Music. In Mesa Fiesta. And so go over there and hear her and also participate. Talk. Also, if you want to get a hold of me, thoughts@whylifeis.com, go to our website, agelesswisdom.com. That's the metaphysical group that I am part of. And if you would like to do that, that'd be great. You can go do that. Also, if you have a chance, check out foreveryoungproducts.com. I talked about this last week. Check it out. I'm using this stuff, Ideal Cell Absorption Resveratrol. Don't wait, because I'm telling you, there's a lot more rules and regs, and we won't be able to sell it. Nobody's going to be able to sell it. I'm telling you, this stuff works. And when something works, guess who wants to stop? You got it. So, and if you have animals, really check out the VF formula. It works even better in animals than it does in people, at least faster. I don't know, over the long term, you can say it works better, but definitely you see a more noticeable effect in the animals. Okay, we are out of time for right now. So, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.